It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the Keep Sounding Podcast. This is your defensive preview of the preseason Panthers defense. This is Brian, joined by John as always. John, how are you doing?
What's up, Brian? I'm doing good. How are you?
Great. We have football right around the corner, though. Fun fact, I thought the first Panthers preseason game was this Saturday, so I was sad to find out it was not this Saturday.
No, they haven't even played the Hall of Fame game yet.
Yeah, it just slipped my mind that the Hall of Fame game is its own week, which is stupid. But
the Hall
anyway.
Of Fame game as a thing is stupid. I mean, like, the Hall of Fame game is cool as a concept, but they shouldn't give the teams a whole extra preseason game. They should just be one of their three.
Right. Well, before we get into that, we have our OG again on the show, Jackson. Jackson, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, Brian. Thanks for having me back.
Good to have you back on the show. So tell us what you think of the Hall of Fame game real quick.
Oh, was it Jets at Browns? The players I'd like to see in that contest probably will not play. But, hey, maybe they will. Maybe Aaron will come out for, Rodgers. For a set maybe. I don't know.
He's not coming. I'm sorry.
I saw the Browns. The Browns aren't even playing their backup quarterback. Like, I can't remember who it was. Who was the quarterback they drafted?
Zach Wilson? I thought he was playing.
I'm talking about the Browns. He's not on.
Oh, the Browns. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so they have Deshaun Watson and Joshua Dobbs, and they neither of them are playing. They're like, Kellen Mond's going to get the start, and then Dorian Thompson Robinson's going to play. They don't even want to get their backups involved in this.
That sounds like a thrilling contest to me.
Yeah.
Great way to kick off the season.
I mean, the Hall of Fame game is always funny because it's always like everybody's really excited that football's back and people always put it on. And then it's like the backups playing, a competitive football game with 2 weeks of practice and everybody's like, oh, yeah, this sucks. And doesn't make it through the whole game and forgets about it for the whole week.
Right. Yeah, it's just stupid. I don't get it. I've had a growing disdain for the preseason ever since I started writing for CSR and doing the social media stuff, and it's just gotten even worse recently.
Yeah. I mean, it's an important thing to have, but, like I said, it's just dumb that they have to play an extra preseason game. Like, why would you're getting punished for – no one cares. Just take away one of their their preseason games.
Right.
Well, if I can speak for the fantasy crowd, we're always looking for sleepers.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Some wide receiver is going to have a 10 catch game. And then people are going to be like, I'm going to snag him in the 14th round and then he gets cut.
I'll be checking out that quarterback. Maybe I'll stash him on my bench.
Right. Yeah.
You never know. You just never know.
Yeah.
But Panthers-related news that will also be a nice transition into reviewing each position. The Panthers signed Deion Jones, former Falcons Pro Bowl linebacker, this week. That was pretty cool. I was a fan of that.
Yeah, he used to be good.
He did used to be good, and then he got traded midway through the season last year for no reason to the Browns. And played five games there, started five games there, I should say. It was definitely a move that they needed to make because, surprisingly, one of the biggest losses on the defense this past offseason was losing Corey Littleton, their third-string linebacker, because, you know, they don't really have anybody aside from Frankie Louvu and Shaq Thompson, who are both good. But, yeah, Deion Jones. Also, fun fact, wearing Brian Burns' old number since Brian Burns went to number zero.
Which is going to be cool.
Yeah. I mean, overall, Deion,
he's only 28 years old.
So,
you know, I think he's got a little left in the tank.
Well, apparently today he was taking some first team snaps. So that's always good, even though he probably had no idea what the hell was going on. So that's always good. But yeah, I mean, looking at the linebacker group, obviously Frankie Louvu has turned into the biggest grab that Matt Rhule made as a head coach. Shaq Thompson, you know, still good. Panthers fans bitched about him being overpaid for a while. Then he took a pay cut. But yeah, behind that, it's just, ooh.
I think the outside linebacker, like the front half of the linebacker, like depth chart, like the starters look really good, and then it just kind of falls off a cliff after that.
Yeah, I mean, Kamu Grugier-Hill was supposed to be their third string guy, and he's basically been like mostly special teamer slash backup his whole career. And, you know, your third linebacker is typically a guy you are going to rely on to play a few snaps every game. Then beyond that was Brandon Smith, who is another one of those guys, John, that we love to talk about, where the Panthers traded up for him, so now everybody hates them.
Yeah, and I mean, he wasn't like super good as a rookie either. I mean, maybe, I don't know, like, I'm trying to be optimistic because of the athleticism and stuff that he just needed to adjust. Mm-hmm. But that's the risky run being a player that gets traded up for, since that's definitely something they can control. You know, you know, it's kind of what you're asking for. You better live up to the value of two draft picks.
Right. I don't know if we ever heard your thoughts on Mr. Brandon Smith there, Jackson. So why don't you lay those out?
Had high hopes. You got, you know, the athleticism, the size and all that. You know, he could still turn it around, but so far it's not looking like a good move. You know, he got just really hasn't, you know, played in 12 games, one start, he made 8 tackles.
Now, yeah. There's not a whole lot of analysis there, obviously.
Yeah.
It is kind of funny because, like, when you look at the trade in hindsight, it wasn't, like, you know, as bad as a certain other linebacker we'll probably talk about here in the podcast. But they traded away their 2 fifth-round picks to Washington for the fourth-round pick for Washington and a 6th-round pick. So they essentially just swapped some picks around and moved around where they were picking to get him. So regardless, though, he is a guy where there is no loyalty to him from this coaching staff, so there's very much chance that he could get let go, especially with Deion Jones being signed. I think that that makes that fifth linebacker spot all the more interesting.
Yeah, just looking, they haven't posted the depth chart yet.
No.
I'll be curious to see where he's at.
Yeah, usually I think that they do that like right before the first preseason game, I think.
Yeah.
And then that's another thing, like the you know, annual rituals, they post the first unofficial depth chart and like every rookie is behind the veteran that they're supposed to be better than, and everyone gets mad because they're like, oh, we already did it with Bryce Young, but they'll be like, why is Jonathan Mingo behind LaVisca Chenault? That's like, that's concerning. He should be better than that. It's like, well, they always do that.
Yeah. Okay. The unofficial depth chart, the bane of most preseason fans' existence.
Yeah.
It's a smart coach move, really, just to give the veteran the benefit of the doubt to begin with.
You know? Right. We just everybody forgets that every year.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would think. Yeah. So what do you think we keep what? How many interior linebackers do you think we keep, Ryan or Jack?
Well, I think it's going to be 4 or 5. I mean, one of the variables there is always special teams, so you need those guys. So I think I would lean towards more towards 5, but based on what I read about Ajiro Evero's defense in Denver and just the general makeup of the linebacker group, it looks like they're never going to have more than like 2 linebackers on the field at the same time. And obviously Jeremy Chinn factors into that conversation as well. So yeah, it's kind of difficult to say. I mean, I think 5 is where they'll go, and that's where I think Brandon Smith fits in. I mean, I can't looking at the linebacker group aside from Bumper Pool with his elite name. I think he should make the team regardless. Fuck the rest of them, but you know, I think it's going to be 5, and then they'll probably keep 1 or 2 on practice squad as per usual. So
yeah, I think it's like probably 3 or 4 that you make as like your linebacker rotation, and then maybe one is like makes it as a special teamer. But that I can't remember who I remember reading that about, but they're like, you get to a point where you're like, when you're doing cutdowns, there's like, you don't break it down like, all right, we need 7 cornerbacks and 4 safeties and 5 linebackers. It's like, all right, we need this many linebackers, this many corners, this many safeties, and we need like 6 guys for coverage, punt coverage, and stuff like that. And the position they play, like listed as defensively, doesn't really matter.
Yep.
So.
Yep. That's true.
For what it's worth, the Broncos on their last depth chart last year had 4 interior linebackers. No, 3. They only had 3.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right, and this is a good transition maybe into the edge defender discussion, but they obviously have a lot to do with that as well, and Frankie Louvu will have some kind of factor into that too, because he'll likely get snaps on the edge as well. The edge is a position where I don't know how I feel about it yet. Obviously, Brian Burns is good.
Brian Burns feels like he's in where he's supposed to be now.
Yeah.
But the rest of it's like, and then Yetur Gross-Matos is probably like has been our like number 2 DN, but I feel like he's not as good of a fit as like a stand up pass like edge rusher.
Yeah, he seems like if he needs to just put on 20 more pounds and be a defensive end, a 3-4 defensive end.
Right.
Right.
He'd be an athletic one for that. Right now, on like our nickel, PFF is showing Marquise Haynes moving in at defensive end. I'm not crazy about that at all.
Well, my theory last year was co-starters between Marquise Haynes and Yetur Gross-Matos when they were running a 4-3, and that didn't pan out the way that I wanted it to. But Marquise Haynes definitely showed he was one of the more productive pass rushers on the team. He just didn't get as many snaps as you'd hope, but I mean, if I'm not mistaken, last year was a career year for him, so as a pass rusher on the outside, that might work out to his benefit. Yetur Gross-Matos is just very much the guy I don't really know what to expect from, basically. And then obviously the Panthers drafted again another hated player, DJ Johnson. They traded up to get him. They traded away late round picks to make their draft even smaller. And he supposedly was the guy that did a lot of the things they're looking for. I think that's more of the like setting the edge type stuff, because that's definitely something they're lacking there. But overall, just a lot of question marks. It's going to come down to execution at that point, I think.
Yeah, I've looked at tape on him now, and I like the pick. Mm-hmm. I think he has a lot of potential, his size, and he's very active motor type of guy. And I think the way Oregon used him is similar to what we should be doing with him.
Which was what, like just moving him around? I know he played like every different position possible at different points in his career, so he isn't super experienced for an old draft pick.
Right. That he could play in a different, you know, he's not set to one defense like the nickel or the base. That he could move around in different spots, almost like a rover. Not that we would play that, but now that I've watched a lot of tape on him, I like it. I really hadn't heard of him, looked at him prior to the draft. or even until we talked about him last week and I was looking at him, I was like, hey, yeah, take a look at this guy.
It's funny
because
okay, well, I was just going to say, I looked at his draft profile from NFL.com. I want to say it was Lance Zierlein who did it, but it might have been somebody else. But they actually got him right where they project, where that particular profile projected him to go.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, I remember reading all these things about how it was a reach and blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, before the draft, that particular profile, which I know, not to say that, you know, NFL.com is infallible or anything like that, but the fact that they got him right where they expected, where he would have been expected to go by that particular analyst, is interesting.
Yeah.
He was projected round 3 to 4, and they got him in the, you know, middle of the third round. Like that.
Yeah.
Fits.
We're not real deep at outside linebacker, honestly. We only have 6 on the roster at the moment. I really thought we'd have at least that are called that. And, you know, one's an undrafted Iku Leota out of Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, basically you've got Burns, YGM, Haynes, the rookie, DJ, and the one holdover, Amari Barno, who,
yeah,
if you recall, he was like a preseason darling last year. And then I think he had one good game during the season. He made a play or something.
He didn't really get a lot of snaps, but he did have the one game where he showed out as a pass rusher.
Yeah. I think he had, like, I think he got, didn't he get both of his sacks in the same game?
I want to say that's what happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very fast.
Yes. 4.36 and tall. Yeah.
No, he didn't get both his sacks in the same game.
6'6".
Yeah. But he had a sack in the last game of the season. And then he had a sack against the Bengals, which was probably in garbage time. But
I just remember his last game of the season was the one where we were like, whoa, where did this guy come from?
Yeah. Right. And then, nope. I mean, it's the same thing with Brandon Smith, where it's like, you know, sometimes players aren't good right away and they need to, you know, get like develop physically or adjust to that, the difference in, especially I think sometimes like people don't, maybe like or underestimate how difficult it is to go from being far and away the best athlete on the field to being just a little bit more athletic than everybody, where like you gotta really like iron out like finer details that maybe didn't matter as much before, like,
or especially in a case like Amari Barno, where now he's like his skill set is a speed rusher in the NFL, where maybe when he was in college he could do whatever he wanted really against the athletes he was going up against, so
But yeah, it feels like, I mean, I think this is the case for most positions, but the group seems pretty set, right? With Burns, Gross Matos, Haynes, Johnson, and Barno, probably all pretty safe, and I don't know how much more room there is for anybody else.
No, I mean, the only reason that they'd move on from that would be if they signed someone like Yannick Ngakoue, which at that point I would think that Yeter Gross Matos is gone, but they seem steadfast in keeping what they have around anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Well, speaking of signings, I wish you'd just go ahead and sign Brian Burns to a long-term contract.
Yeah, that would be
awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, let's take that pressure off a little bit. Hey.
It's motivation. Just because you know, make sure he proves it. Make sure it's real.
Well, one of the things with Brian Burns is that, and I see it a lot all the time on the internet, is that he had like what, 12 sacks last year,
mm-hmm.
and everyone looks at that and they're like, well, he doesn't deserve to get the same kind of money as like, you know, Nick Bosa or the other linebackers who have more sacks. But he was fourth in the NFL in pressures.
Yeah, which is pretty good. Which is like the story of his career to this point, but it's not like, I mean, like you'd like to see him convert the more of those into sacks, but like if you're one of the best in the league in pressures and you're still getting 12 sacks, like you're fine. You're doing really well. And he made the Pro Bowl 2 years in a row.
I mean, he's not Julius Peppers by any means, so he's not going to go run over, you know, an all pro offensive tackle who's like super strong, like with a speed, with a strength rush, you know, he's a speedy guy. He's definitely added some moves as far as like the power rush and whatnot, but he's just not big enough to do that. So You know, still an elite pass rusher, though, I would say. I mean, at least if we're talking like top 10, you know.
Yeah.
Which you need those.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see him add a tomahawk chop to his arsenal just from Julius Peppers, you know, the chop, you know, knock the ball loose, then fall on it type of deal.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to move him back to some stats here. Who do you think is the highest graded Panther on PFF defense?
The highest graded PFF Panther on defense.
Yeah, thank you, Lulu.
J.C. Horn.
Nope.
Derek Brown.
It is Derek Brown. And oh. It's not even close.
Really?
Like, yeah, he's at 84, and the closest is Shaq Thompson at 70. No, I'm sorry, Frankie Louvu at 74. Horn, 71. Yeah, just he's like an he's they got him the seventh ranked defensive tackle. So, and I think he's primed for a big year, even though he looked fantastic last year. That he could be even better, particularly if he's not on the field as much, meaning you know the offense is chewing up time. And
he's a
got more around him. You know,
he's a good another. I mean, he's a good example of what I was just talking about with like kind of giving players some time because he wasn't, you know, he was probably overdrafted as a defensive tackle when we drafted him, and then I think that gets extra frustration gets kind of comes out when you overdraft a defensive tackle that's not a pass rusher and then they're not super good right away, but like now he's an elite, you know. Block eating, run stopping defensive tackle. So there's a chance. What
he took a big leap last year from his first 2 years, little improvement, average player, and then last year he just really jumped up.
Right.
I think he's going to be awesome in a 3-4 in the base defense when he's at end and he's not more like the nose guard in the 4-3. So that's really kind of what he was playing last year, and still. You know, got a lot of pressure and let me see, how many sacks did he have?
One.
Yeah. Oh, is that it?
Yep. He just had one sack last year.
Yeah, he did.
But he had 12
not
quarterback
a big sack
hits.
Guy. Yeah.
So which is very good, but still. But yeah, only one.
But he was more of that eat up the blockers run stuffer.
Mm-hmm. You
know, and I think he was kind of miscast at that position. Because that was he's very disruptive. I mean, we saw him over the last couple seasons where there were games where he was taking over. But when you're putting a guy like that in a position where he has to take on the majority of the offense is basically designing a lot of their schemes around blocking him. Of course, he's not going to be as successful where him as an edge guy, or I should say defensive end in the 3-4. I do see him being a little bit more productive and, they signed a lot of beef to just like kind of throw in there, and they still have Marquand McCall as well, who's a big fucking boy. So overall, I mean, I think this is going to be, like you guys said, this is going to be the season where we see a lot more out of him just because he's going to be in a position where he's going to have more chances to get after the quarterback and be more disruptive and less of a space eater.
Right. I'm interested to see like last time, I feel like the Panthers have had good success with like veteran stopgap defensive tackles, like somewhat recently. So I'm interested to see how like having Shy Tuttle and Marquand McCall and then kind of like Deshaun Williams, how those guys, you know, if they open things up for Derek Brown to be more disruptive and less of a, like, you know, almost like a role player in a sense defensively.
Well, I think they went out and got Shy Tuttle very early for a reason, too. I don't know if he's going to be – I think he's going to be a lot more involved, probably play as many snaps as Brown does. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the rest of those guys, I mean, they just kind of, like, added a bunch of beef there. They've been churning the roster out. As you guys probably saw this week, they let go of Bravion Roy. They added LeBryan Ray. They added Nick Thurman, so they're kind of just – it seems like they're kind of just
RIP to working one of on the Matt Rule
churning
guys.
The depth chart, yeah.
Bravion Roy.
Yeah.
You think they just like
holdovers?
I was gonna say, do you think they like when they have like a when they're like look at reviewing the roster, they got like a little tag on their name? Like this is like a little rule tag, like this is these are the guys that like were here before.
Or just so you know, you don't owe this guy anything.
Yeah, well, I guess like there's a couple that were here before rule, like Brian Burns. Is that the same year we hired Rule?
No, Burns was before. A few years before that. Yeah.
Okay, so like Burns and Shaq and like Moten and some of those guys like before Rule, but like yeah, they have like special type for guys that were brought in specifically during that tenure.
I think the last guy left at this point is Sam Franklin from the Baylor/Temple group.
Or just like you mean just from like the Baylor Temple guys, not necessarily guys that were brought in during that time.
Yeah. I mean, like I don't really label people that he brought in all together as the Matt Rule holdovers. It's more so the guys where it's like they were from Baylor and Temple, and it's like okay, you know.
Right. Let's see. Right. There's Mark Milton, but he was
Sam, drafted, or
but he was drafted this year. Sam Tecklenburg.
Yeah. He's he and Sam Franklin are the last two.
The Sams.
Yep. The dual Sams.
That's the trick.
So you mentioned Marquand McCall.
Yep.
PFF doesn't have him as a starter at the moment. I guess they're just probably going by years. Shy Tuttle's got 5 years. And McCall's his second year out of Kentucky. He is a big boy though, 345. Tuttle's only 300 pounds. Yeah,
we're a little small in the front, like on the front. The starters are on the defensive line for a 3-4. Like traditionally speaking, I don't know if it's really as important anymore with you know the way the league is now. But like Browns, like there's Shy Tuttle's only 300 pounds. Derek Brown's not too much over 300 pounds. And then Deshaun Williams, I think they're all like right around 300.
Yeah. They got him at 320.
Yeah. Brown's at 320. Marquand McCall's at 345. So I think those are your guys for the big boy packages.
Yeah. Yeah. The hefty package.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
6'3", 345. That's a big boy.
Henry Anderson came back as well.
Right.
As another 3-4 defensive end. So, I mean, it just seems like they're just going to throw a lot of things at the wall and see what sticks.
Which is fine. I think that's the whole defense this year. Like it's like Brian Burns, and then I don't know if you call Frankie Louvu and Shaq Thompson if they're quite that level of like.
No, not at all.
But well, no, I know Burns is the best, but like it's kind of like Brian Burns, and then a bunch of like is everybody else kind of like we talked about with the receivers last week, like just like not bad enough to be good as a unit.
Right. Right.
Like, you know, who gets like a hot hand as much as you can on defense, but like who's like playing well, kind of see who's winning their matchups or has like an advantage and stuff like that, and kind of ride that out and hope the depth kind of wins out over like top end talent.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess we'll see. And again, it's entirely possible that they go out and get somebody else to add, not just at the outside position or the linebacker position, but even at the defensive line level position. They're clearly looking for talent there, since as evidenced by their multiple moves this week. So
is it just me, or more and more are teams like are general like average NFL players becoming more like expendable, or is it just me just kind of noticing it more, where like guys like Deion Jones being an example of guys that are like not bad players, but they're not rookies, and they just linger out in free agency longer than it used to. I feel like there's more like names, so to speak, in free agency, like more and more each year than there used to be.
Yeah, I think it's because of their early success. They price themselves out of those third contracts.
Yeah.
You know,
where when the play starts to decline a little bit, that.
Yeah, right. They run the actuatorials, like life insurance people. Oh, they're all over the NFL, you know, as far as, oh, he's 28 in 10 months. He's about to have a decline.
Well, I thought that when you said that about Deion Jones, like he's only 28. I'm like, I don't know. He's If you're not an elite player, once you've hit the late 20s, you're like on the downhill, on the downslope.
Because of all you nerds in your goddamn spreadsheets, Sean.
Yeah.
I think it's I mean, to an extent though, I think it's like a like allocation of resources thing, right? Where it's like and I think this is a lot of sports, but like teams I think are maybe finding it better if you have like just like using regular like numbers, like 10 really high priced players that are really, really good, and then the rest of the roster is like filler, as opposed to having like three players that are really, really, or like five players that are really, really high paid, and then like a bunch of mid tier players. You know what I mean? Like you gain more ground by having more elite players than you do by having like thinner depth than you lose.
If you can Does avoid the injury sense? Bug, yeah.
If you can avoid the injury bug, yeah. Like that's the chance you take. Is like, I'd rather have more superstars, even if my depth is worse, than it is than have like three superstars and a bunch of depth, because you know the depth is always going to lose to the superstars unless the superstars get hurt. So, yep.
Yeah, I was thinking we had a middle-aged secondary. Now you're making me think they're old. Xavier Woods and Bell are both 28.
Yeah, I don't know if they can keep up with those young guys running around out there. Brian, are you
gotta be running?
Brian, do you like our secondary? You're a big secondary guy, and we've invested pretty heavily in the secondary.
I don't think it's as bad as people are making it out to be.
I'm surprised that people are making it out to be bad. Like, not that it's like super good, but like,
and maybe it's just me being you know, going on CSR and reading takes and stuff from our fans and listeners. But I look at the secondary and I see Dante Jackson, J.C. Horn. I know everybody's blowing up the fact that they're injury prone. Jackson is back. He seems like he's fine. J.C. Horn is back. He seems like he's fine. Love those two as starters. I mean, I know Jackson has had his ups and downs, but Henderson, Keith Anderson have both had a very good camp recently. And I know with CJ Henderson's kind of a broken record, because last year he had a really good camp, and then, you know, he surrendered like three touchdowns to Mike Evans in one game. But looking at the depth that they have at corner, I mean, you know, they added Eric Rowe, so he's going to factor into that conversation with the nickel. They drafted Jamie Robinson, who I really like, and he's probably going to factor into the nickel corner conversation. So at that point, you're looking at the top four corners, and they have to figure out how to field for only two positions, really, if you have those two dedicated to nickel. And Jeremy Chinn factors into that conversation as well, which I don't think is talked about enough, because Jeremy Chinn playing like a box safety or like a heavy nickel type guy, that means that he's taking that off the plate of somebody else in the secondary. And with their safeties, I mean, I just like what they've done with the safeties. I mean, Eric Rowe can play safety. Von Bell's been fine throughout his career. I think Xavier Woods is highly underrated. He's just not the type of guy who gets a ton of picks. I mean, if the front seven works itself out, I mean, I could see the secondary being just fine.
I think so, too. I mean, I know it's against what I just said, but, like, the Panthers are trying, I think, building by trying to make the roster as strong as possible top to bottom until they can fill out with the elite talent. And like, I think the secondary looks like the most complete group, especially if J.C. Horn becomes like, is as good as we think he can be. Right.
Well, no, he is as good as we know.
He stays on the field. Right.
But it's just a matter of him staying healthy and Dante Jackson staying healthy. And I think that's why fans are so kind of like skittish about it. Mm-hmm. Is because they expect them to get injured. And I get that. But looking at it on paper, I mean, yeah, if you look at it on paper and you eliminate the injury risk, which I know is kind of like moving the goalposts a little bit, but they can be okay. They still need to see CJ Henderson progress a little bit. But, you know, overall, I like what they have. They got Rajon Wright, who a lot of people had marked as a mid-round pick as a corner. He seems fine. You know, it's one of those things. I feel like you can't, like, if they just took all that, if they just started loading the barracks with guys who were starter level in the corner, like four starter level corners, at least, like, and paid them like starter level corners, then you don't have the flexibility to go out and get guys like Deion Jones, you know? So,
yeah. Yeah, I feel I almost I don't know, I feel almost better about the secondary than I do any other like full position group. Just in terms of like, you know, like I said, JC Horn is a shutdown corner, and then Dante Jackson's a very good number two corner. And then the depth is fine. Like obviously you don't want Keith Taylor and CJ Henderson out there a lot, but they've had moments. And then with Chinn, Woods, and Bell, and then maybe and hopefully Jamie Robinson, like and Eric Rowe, kind of in that safety nickel, different positions, like in interior part of the secondary. Like everyone, there's no like weak link really, like significantly. Obviously, there are some players that are worse, but this is football. You can't have good players at every single position. It's kind of how the sport works.
Right, and I would agree with I agree with that. And it's one of those things where, when it comes to replacing guys who get injured, it's just you have to, you can have a contingency plan, but you can't just plan on guys being injured, especially with this patchwork, with this coach. I shouldn't say patchwork, but this coaching staff coming in and inheriting a pretty good defense on their own. There'll be injuries. And if they need to find other corners, there's plenty on the market right now. I mean, it's not like they can't find one if somebody gets hurt. It's not like they're all going to get sniped off the market, especially the guys who are looking for starter money. Like, you can throw them a few million dollars for a 1-year deal if you really need to replace Dante Jackson or JC Horn. Which, by the way, I just want to get into a real quick point about JC Horn. I remember reading a bunch of takes on the internet that he was super injury prone and we can't depend on him and blah, blah, blah. After he was put in a walking boot, which, by the way, the reporters said he would be recovered by training camp, which he is, before mini camps, where he was held out of the preseason stuff. And that dude didn't have an injury history coming out of college. He broke his foot in a freak injury, his rookie season. That happens. It just happens to players. People get hurt. And then last season, he played every game up until that Lions game, which now we know the turf was super, super rough. We've heard complaints from the Lions players, the Lions fans about that game in Carolina, where it was a lot colder than it ever should have been. And obviously, that's an argument against the turf, but we don't have to get into that today. He broke his wrist, and even if the Panthers somehow made the playoffs after that, there was talk that he could come back. So I just don't understand where all of a sudden JC Horn is made of glass.
I don't know, man, he got hurt 2 years in a row. I don't care. Don't come at me with like the significance of the injuries. I just like binary injured, yes or no. There's two yeses on the list.
It's just very weird to me because it's not like it's a soft tissue injury where he's like had a nagging hamstring since he became an NFL player. It's
Right.
not like he tore the same muscle and in the same leg or anything like that. He broke his foot and he broke his wrist. And even with the wrist injury, he could have been back like 2 or 3 weeks later if they really needed him to, which obviously they didn't because, CJ Henderson got his lunch eaten by Mike Evans. But regardless, it's just one of those things where I don't understand why we all of a sudden have to look at it with that negative cloud of like, oh, well, he's not going to be back, so we need to sign a bunch of players that can play for that. It's like, really? Because JC Horn is the best corner we have, and he's one of the best in the NFL already, and he's only been in the league for 2 years.
What did we ever get any more clarification on what injury he had during OTAs other than it was an ankle injury? Like he very easily could have just like twisted an ankle, right? Like
It was some kind of foot injury that happened not on the field, is
yeah, but
all
we
I
don't
know.
know like what it was, right? I saw an
No, I
ankle,
mean
but
they were
like
cryptic about it. I mean the reports said that he was going to be back, which should be enough, but
I'm
because
saying
we're
yeah, but that's my thing where like he could have just twisted his ankle. He could have just like stepped on a foot or just like rolled his ankle and professional athletes get put in a walking boot for like literally any lower like foot discomfort. So like that's not doesn't really mean anything significant. So like
Yeah, and like it's doesn't makes it's not like JC Horn is, bad or someone who really needs seasoning. Like we saw the games he played, even his rookie season, he was getting rated as one of the better corners in the NFL. Last year he was rated as one of the better corners in the NFL. So it's not like him missing mini camp snaps is going to change much. I just
yeah,
don't get it.
No, I think he'll be fine. And like nothing's been serious. I mean, the broken foot was bad, but like these last two things are minor. And like I said, like the broken wrist is whatever. Like upper body injuries to players on the outside are like complete non-factors, like long term. And then if the ankle thing was that minor where it got like no coverage or didn't cause any real significant missed time, he probably, like I said, he probably just like tweaked his ankle and like had to shut it down for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he played what, 13, 14 games last year without a
Played
problem with the
13,
foot? Yeah. So it's just stupid. I don't understand it. Like Dante Jackson, I get it because because it's always been weird with him, and this is what, his fifth year with Carolina at this point. So actually, no, I guess this would be his sixth year because he signed
It'll
it.
be a
He,
6 year.
yeah, he re-signed. So I get it with him, but with JC Horn, it's two seasons. Just
Jackson's
relax.
also not really missed that much time.
Yeah.
Missed the he last year was the torn Achilles, right?
Yeah, which I
Yeah.
understand the skepticism with that kind of injury because that's a
Right.
big fucking deal.
But prior to
Where,
that, but
yeah.
prior to that, he missed 0, 3, 2, 4 games. Like that's normal stuff.
Anything you'd like to add to that, Jackson? I heard you chiming in a little bit.
Well, he honestly, he's much better at run support than he is coverage, unfortunately. And he has a lot of speed, but he's also got burned a lot. So his performance hasn't been the greatest. So I get why some people are down on him and were surprised we re-signed him.
Oh, I totally get
But
that part.
yeah.
Not, yeah.
Talking about Dante Jackson, of course.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for JC Horn, it's just about the injuries, you know. He just got to stay on the field more. So, and if they do seem the freak of nature type injuries, and of course, I've made it clear I just don't like the Panthers moving away from grass at all anyway. So, I'm always going to blame the turf when it happens.
I think everybody's in agreement there. No one likes it.
Yeah, no, totally in agreement there with you, 100%.
Like literally no one likes it. Like none of the players like it, none of the fans like it. The only like entity that's like pushing for the turf is like the organization and like David Tepper.
Because it makes it
That makes those
easier to
dollars go.
maintain, and you can then use it in the off season for other things and not worry about the turf getting torn up.
Which is wild to me that like a multi-billion-dollar organization's like, I don't want to have to spend money to take care of the grass.
Right.
Not even just a multi-billion dollar organization, but one of the richest owners in the NFL is
Yeah.
doing that. It's not even like it's a cash-strapped owner where he's
Right.
got all his money locked up in like real estate and shit. Like he has the money. I don't understand.
Right, I know. Well, like the soccer team's having that fight too, like, that there's like concern that now that Lionel Messi's in MLS that he's only gonna play on grass fields. So they're like, are you gonna put grass in the stadium for that game just to be sure? And they're like, nah. Turf is fine.
I should. Tepper what wiped his ass with $5 million down in Rock Hill, didn't he? So, he should be able to.
Just use that money for the turf or for the
Yeah,
grass.
right. So if I can segue into Jeremy Chinn, where he's supposed to be in the secondary, right? A box safety. What they're going to move him out of linebacker, particularly in this lineup. He certainly doesn't fit at linebacker now. So why sign Von Bell? Right now in PFF on the nickel defense, he's in there, but in the base, Chinn is on the bench. And I just question that. The guy, he's such a good athlete. I get his PFF grade ain't the greatest at 55, but we all seen the plays he makes. It's just like, where is he going to be on the field? You think?
I think. Well, you go ahead, Brian.
Go ahead, John.
No, you go ahead.
No,
Well,
you're
I
up
was gonna
first.
say,
Go ahead,
I
John.
feel like it's kind of like we talked about, just like I don't know, just get good players. And I think, in terms of like, actually, I have my phone is ringing. Great podcasting, but I have to take it. So, all you, Brian.
Oh, no problem, buddy. I'll take it over. No problem. So number one, PFF with their whatever depth chart projections, that just doesn't run with me. It's very clear to me that what they're doing is they're going to move Jeremy Chinn around and have him kind of play more of a hybrid type role. I very much think what we're going to see is like nickel type defenses, which as you may know, you know, nickel defense is pretty much like the bulk of what defenses do anymore in the NFL. So what I see them doing, and I think that's what I've seen reported, is they'll have him more closer to the line of scrimmage. So I could see him being nickel linebacker, you know, just straight up linebacker, or like a safety playing up there. I don't think it's that Von Bell's replacing him. I just think that they signed another safety so that they don't need Jeremy Chinn to just do your traditional safety stuff anymore, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'd say he lined up mostly in as slot corner last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're right. If we end up going running a nickel, which it seems that's pretty much, you're right, the base defense these days, then that, you know, that's where he slots in there as that fifth defensive back. I guess it makes sense then.
Well, it also works in the sense that Frankie Louvu will also move around quite a bit because he was taking snaps at the edge at times last year where he was rushing the passer. So at that point you could sub, like, especially in passing situations where there's maybe one running back behind the line of scrimmage and five offensive linemen, you know, then you slide Jeremy Chinn in there as like a linebacker next to Shaq Thompson. You have Frankie Louvu rushing off the edge. Then all of a sudden, you know, it's not as big of a deal. And I do think we're going to see a lot of those like exotic schemes where we'll have, like, you know, Brian Burns and Marquise Haynes rushing from the interior in passing situations. So I'm not really concerned about Von Bell replacing Jeremy Chinn as much as just I think it's going to be fun to watch what they're going to do with Jeremy Chinn, because I think it's going to be a fun chess piece to watch, and really, especially early in the season when teams don't know what the fuck we're doing with them. But I mean, I could be wrong, but that's kind of how I've interpreted it, is just that they're going to make him be the special chess piece he's supposed to be, because pigeonholing him at safety didn't seem to work last year. But I don't know. What are your thoughts, buddy?
I agree. You know, it does seem that's the route they're going, because otherwise the Von Bell signing doesn't really make sense.
Right.
You know, so he could be a blitzer too. We saw he's effective at that. So interesting puzzle piece our new DC has to work with there.
And that's one of those things that I really love about what they've assembled right now, is that JC Horn, I don't know if you know this, but JC Horn was actually highly rated as a blitzer as well. Over the last couple seasons. So I like the fact that they have guys like him. They have guys like Jeremy Chinn, where they can just kind of send him on a blitz randomly, and you can actually expect some decent results there. I remember the one interception, I forget who got it, but JC Horn jumped like fucking 15 feet in the air to make the quarterback throw the ball like super high in the air, where it kind of like ducked down and the cornerback picked it off. Like, I like that kind of stuff. I see where a guy like Ajiro Evero can really use those guys who are good at blitzing to kind of just put him in a position to succeed, even if they're not in coverage. So I'm very excited about the secondary in that sense.
Yep. Same here.
Yeah. Do you ever get to watch any film on Jeremy Robinson?
No, I have not.
Well, just to give you my little rundown on him, that dude is a savage fucking tackler.
Yeah.
Not the best in coverage by what I saw of just the very brief amount of film that I watched, but he is a hitter, and that's the kind of guy I like for a nickel corner. I mean, we remember guys like Captain Munnerlin, where he would blitz off the edge, and he could be a factor in that front, even being a smaller guy. I like him a lot. I like what I saw from Eric Rowe in Miami. As far as being those like edge defensive backs who can do a lot of different things. So I'm excited just to see how they deploy it. I don't know how it's going to work in execution, just because even though I'm higher on the secondary than, you know, probably the large majority of Panthers fans, I do see a scenario where we're sitting there being like that, like, what the hell are they doing if the guys don't perform? So it's going to be very interesting there. Happy they got Sam Franklin back, though, because he was very good. At least as far as special teams goes. But would you like to do... Oh, sorry.
I'd say that whole, when you said how much he rushes, I had to look that up. So it looks like he came at the... Horn led the secondary, our secondary, was 17 blitzes.
Oh, it was great. So,
yeah.
I loved it. It was amazing because he's tall as shit, too. So even if, like, he didn't get after the passer, you know, he jumped in the air because he's a high-level athlete. Yeah. And, you know, he'd jump in the air and the quarterback had to figure out how to get the ball around him. Like, you know, that big, big, fast, lanky guy. Like,
yeah,
that was one of the more surprising stats that I saw. Not surprising from the eye test, but just, like, once I saw PFF and whatever assemble their evaluation for it to actually, like, match up to the eye test was surprising.
Yeah. So, 6'1", long arms. That's why he was so highly rated.
Yeah. One of the highest rated relative athletic scores we've ever seen at corner. If you followed that. Kent Lee Platty, we had on the show one time, he does the relative athletic score. And yeah, his relative athletic score scores were off the fucking charts.
Really?
Yeah. I'll have to see if I can find it real quick, but...
You just Google J.C. Horn RAS and it'll pop up. I'm back, by the way.
Good to have you back, John.
Hey, you guys missed me. J.C. Horn is 9.99.
Yep.
Wow.
Ranked number 2 out of 1,784 cornerbacks from 1987 to 2021.
In other words, Josh Norman with Deion Sanders athleticism is what we deemed. So yeah, that's why I'm always here to stand for J.C. Horn, because I still love that pick regardless of the fact we didn't get Justin Fields.
Right. I mean, Bryce Young can make everybody forget about that.
Right, exactly. It all worked out. I had it in my head. It's fine.
We all knew it back in 2021. We're just gonna be bad for 2 more years, and we're gonna trade up to number 1 to draft a 5'10" quarterback,
mm-hmm.
and everybody will be happy.
Yep. Get a franchise left tackle along the way as well.
Right. The Matt Rhule knew he had botched the quarterback pick, so he just passed. And
I'll let someone else that knows what they're doing take care of this part.
He really thought Sam Darnold was his answer.
Hey, Sam Darnold's apparently better than Trey Lance.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yep.
It's amazing how the NFL works in that way. I guess we might as well touch on it while we're here. Special teams. So
yeah,
that's pretty good.
That's an important side of the ball.
Yeah. Both sides. So obviously we got J.J. Jansen back, Panthers legend, most veteran Panthers player of all time. By the way, just
he's
so going
to be
know.
Pretty close to being double the veteranship of the next closest person on the team, right?
Yeah.
At least in terms of Panthers tenure.
Oh yeah.
Nah, I don't think that's true. Fuck, Colin Jones was around here for like 8 goddamn.
I'm talking
seasons.
About like no, like actively currently on the roster.
Oh well, yeah, definitely. Then yeah, like the next
like, it's like
Jack
yeah.
Thompson. Then yeah, you're so right.
Right, that's what I mean. 16 years all on the Panthers, or pretty much all on the Panthers. Shaq Thompson's 9, so yeah, he's almost doubled up.
Mm-hmm.
Panthers tenure of every other active Panther.
Yep. And then we shockingly retained Eddie Pinheiro. Well, I shouldn't say shockingly, because he definitely earned it, but
right.
Retained Eddie Pinheiro over Zane Gonzalez. And if I'm not mistaken, Pinheiro had like one of the best PAT percentages of all kickers last year. And maybe even field goal percentages.
Maybe one of the best field goal percentages. He was just all around really good, which it was like wild after the kicking not like issues that the Panthers have had the last couple years. Ever since the whole Graham Gano, Harrison Butker debacle that we've talked about too much. Like the fact that they've like stumbled into having two really good kickers in a row, like really a reversal of fortune there.
Yeah, it's very interesting that that happened because, I mean, for a while there, once Graham Gano suffered whatever injury, then we were just kind of like circling through kickers, you know, because they just cursed us after Harrison Butker, that whole debacle. I don't even want to get into it.
Eddie Pinheiro was second in the NFL in field goal percentage, but the person he was behind, Cameron Dicker, who was 21 of 22, which is a pretty low number. So of the 22 kickers that kicked at least 30 field goal attempts, he was number one in terms of field goal percentage.
Yep, and I'm sure he'll fall off a cliff next year after we hitched our wagon to him. So,
yeah, you know.
I'm still pissed about Harrison Butker. So,
it's amazing how they made the Galaxy brand move to get a kicker like that at such a low draft pick, and then they were just like, you know what, you're gone.
Yes, that part actually is what drove me the maddest about it, because I was totally like, oh, well, Gano's out of here. You know, they spent a draft pick on him. There's no way. They got him. I'm just like, what?
And then the worst part was after that, once we let Graham Gano go, Graham Gano was also one of the most successful kickers in the NFL with the Giants. So yeah. it was just a double punch in the face.
Yeah. We had two really good kickers and cut both of them.
Because – you know, they're a dime a dozen. You get one of those with a running back, you know, as a, right. like a side of fries. So.
Right. But hopefully this one stays good. I wish he had a stronger leg, but I don't know. It's probably more important that he just makes all his kicks that he's trotted out there for, right?
Yep.
Right. Well, this isn't the Ron Rivera era, so hopefully we're not attempting 63-yard kicker.
I don't know. I did enjoy just trotting out Joey Sly like once a week to try a 60-yard field goal just for kicks. Literally kicks, and it never working.
He's still in the league, though, ain't he? I thought I saw.
Oh, I mean, Ron Rivera. As long as Ron Rivera is in the league, Joey Sly is going to be in the league.
Oh, that's a good question. Let me look real quick.
He's on the Commanders.
He's still on the Commanders. Wow,
that's what I'm saying.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Guy's jacked though. Other than that.
I mean, remember the Panthers would keep two kickers when they had John Casey. That's how.
Oh, Reese and Lloyd, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. The pudgy just one guy that all he did was kick off.
Yeah. Easiest job in NFL history, I think.
He literally could grab his tee and run off the side of the field.
Yep. I never thought I'd speak Reese Lloyd's name again, so I appreciate that, Jackson.
You're welcome.
Oh man. Well, before we transition off the podcast, is there anything else we want to discuss about the defense?
No, I'm all set.
I hit my
Johnny Hecker's still good.
High points.
That's cool too.
Oh yeah, Johnny Hecker's great.
Yeah.
Best signing they made all last season.
That's probably the extent of my analysis there.
Mm-hmm. It's very good.
Thanks.
And he'll be better when they have an offense that's not piloted by Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold, hopefully, with the asterisk, hopefully.
Oh, but the Bucs are going to the playoffs with Baker Mayfield.
Yep.
I'm excited for that reunion.
I think Kyle Trask's chances of starting are looking pretty good by, what, week four?
Is it that quick?
Yeah.
I'd give it to like week eight.
Week eight?
Yeah, I mean it's not. What?
We don't play the Buccaneers until week 13, so.
Yeah.
They have time to figure out what's going on there.
Right. Right. But yeah, my last little point, I figured I'd just ask you guys who you're most excited about after, because, you know, it's training camp, so there's always those training camp darlings, the Armani Edwards of the world, where the media is hyping them up and we're all excited for them. So who are you guys excited the most about as far as just the training camp, you know, stories that we've been reading? And I can start first if you need a second to think.
Go ahead.
I mean, I brought him up earlier, but Keith Taylor, I mean, showing out against a guy like Bryce Young with how good his mentals are, how good his processing is, the fact that he's been having a really good camp is optimistic to me. I think it's a different situation from C.J. Henderson, where C.J. Henderson was a plus athlete, where Keith Anderson very much is not. So for him to have
it's
a really
Keith
good
Taylor, camp, you've said you've called him the wrong name like twice.
God
now.
Damn it, Keith Taylor! I'm so sorry.
You called him something else earlier too. I don't remember what it was.
Keith Taylor. No, Keith Taylor. He's not a plus athlete by any means, where C.J. Henderson is. So I like Keith Taylor a lot, and I think that he will factor into the cornerback rotation this year, especially if they're going to be zone heavy, which I think that's what going to be a lot of what Ijeur Evero does, at least early on. So Keith Taylor having himself a great camp. I'm happy to see it, and hopefully he can catch an interception, because in college he didn't catch a single one.
One of these days.
Yeah, one of these days.
I'm gonna get you. I'm just gonna say Bryce Young. I know that's like a super easy answer, but I mean, like, he's been like getting all the hype, so now I want to see it.
I did get my my first process blue jersey, and I did go ahead and pull the trigger on a Bryce Young jersey. So I agree.
Nice.
Yeah, or at least the new process blue, I should say, because I have the old process blue. But
wasn't process blue before.
I thought that was what they called it. Well, I guess that's what the color is for Nike or whatever.
Yeah.
Process blue.
That was the original Panthers blue color, I believe. When they moved over to Nike, Nike did not have that color, so we got basically teal. So now it's a little more... it looks a lot more like the original Panthers blue, especially the alternate home jerseys, the all blue.
Gotta find that. This one is process blue.
Yeah.
Process blue. Okay.
I thought the original idea was to make it closer to what they were what they had before they moved from Reebok to Nike, John. I could be wrong.
That's what it was. No, you're right. I'm just saying, like, it was a different color before, but they Nike updated their like color book of like available colors for jerseys.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't being an asshole.
No, you're right.
So, but yeah, I got my first one. It's Bryce Young, so I'm hitching my wagon to that. The last jersey I purchased was a Torrey Smith, and that didn't work out very well. So,
that was on purpose.
That was on a bet with Billy Marshall that
that was not that like a
wouldn't draft a quarterback above the third or above the fourth round, which they did in Will Greer.
So, barely.
Yeah, son of a bitch.
I'm shocked you lost that one.
They had Cam Newton still, Jackson. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
But
Will Greer too. Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's a name from the past. Yep. So I guess you're coming around to me. I guess two things. As far as like the preseason, you know, we're not going to see a lot of the starters and that. But I want to see how Matt Corral does, you know, and then, you know, see if there's a Matt Corral, Jonathan Mingo connection in game one, or Terrace Marshall. I think Matt Corral got a real raw deal. Getting hurt when he did, and again, he's what, a third round pick. I mean, I get he wasn't a real high pick, but I really still think the kid can play. I'm hoping anyway. Not that he's gonna make noise on this depth chart, but you know, he could at least be a guy we deal for draft capital, you know, in a year or two. Hopefully yeah, really he never has to play.
I really liked him when he came out, so yeah, I do want to see him actually play, because he was really bad the one preseason game he played last year.
Yeah, which was not fair to him, and then he got hurt. So
yeah.
And then just the other thing is just to see that if we can get a pass rush with the depth. You know, we won't see the starters. Well, we won't see Brian Burns in there, but it'll be interesting. The rest of them might play a good bit just to see who can win. I think that other spot across from him is wide open. Yeter doesn't have that lockdown. And there's a lot of the whole scheming to it as well on, you know, who's over on that side. As you were said earlier, Brian, that Frankie Luvu could drop in there and play the outside linebacker position. Deion Jones, the recent signing, same as well. You know, these guys are big enough to play that role, you know, for a few downs throughout a game. So that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, no, I think the outside pass rusher opposite Brian Burns is definitely worth watching in the preseason. Between Amare Barno, Yeter Gross-Matos, DJ Johnson, I think we'll get a lot of getting to see those guys play because there aren't a whole lot of them on the roster at this point. One last thing I'll touch on because you brought up a really good point, Jackson. Matt Corral. I really hope that they can manage to retain him to be Bryce Young's backup for a while because, and I hate to say it this way, but they're both pretty short and the offense wouldn't change that much if Matt Corral has to step in and play after Andy Dalton's gone.
Right. They're very size. I mean, he's a little taller, but they're really about the same size and build. And the games are pretty similar, really.
Yeah, pretty much. And I don't know if they're going to get any trade value from him, even like, and he's most likely going to play most of the preseason, him and the other quarterback they have, which is
Jake Luton.
Yeah. There you go, John. Way to be on top of it. I knew that they had somebody there, but yeah, I think those two guys are going to play a lot. I think we're going to get to see a lot of Matt Corral and not just, you know, thrown in there with the third and fourth stringers where he's going to get killed like he did last offseason. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so I am excited to see Matt Corral play a little bit. I agree with that. So, but it should be fun to watch. We get to see the Panthers play the Jets next Saturday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Eastern time. And I still have really no idea how many actual starters are going to play, but it'll be nice to see the black and blue out there again.
Absolutely.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. So any other points you guys would like to hit on before we end the show?
No, we're about out of time, so I think it's time to wrap it up.
Yeah?
Yep.
Well, from all of us here at the CSR Keep Sounding Podcast, this is Brian joined by John, as always. And Jackson, thanks again for coming on as an OG of the show. We really appreciate having you on to shed some insight. Hope we can see a good season for the Panthers this year, or at least an entertaining one after the last 3 years. So should be a good time. Stay safe. Stay healthy. We'll talk to you guys soon. Tune in. We'll have a bunch of preseason coverage for you.
See you.
See ya. Keep pounding.